Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Our first case of the day is Alan Kress and Randy Carr versus CCA of Tennessee. And it is number 112950. Mr. Acton. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm starting slow. It'll pick up.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Paul Ogden. I represent the plaintiffs, Alan Kress and Randy Carr, in this case. They are class action plaintiffs. They were detained, pretrial detainees, in a facility in a jail that's commonly known as Jail 2 in Marion County, Indianapolis, Indiana. The lawsuit in this case was filed on April 2, 2008. It concerned conditions of confinement at the jail as well as issues relating to medical care, inadequate medical care, and other issues as well, Your Honor. The issues that we're focusing in on appeal are, first of all, the reduction of the pill call round. In early 2008, there was a decision made by CCA, CCA being the private company that runs GL2, to reduce the number of rounds of medication from 3 rounds to 2. As part of this, they determined, actually there was testimony by the doctor that this was so because they had a shortage of nurses. It was not for the individual inmates. Now, there were exceptions made for some inmates, but it was a facility-wide order to reduce the pill call round from 3 to 2 so that they wouldn't have to employ more nurses. In the second one issue that I want to raise is the issue of remedial measures. Remedial measures were apparently taken at the facility and filed in an affidavit pursuant to summary judgment in 2011.
Could we go back to that third
Sure.
pill call for just a second?
Yes, Your Honor.
The jail didn't eliminate the third pill call for everyone. Aren't we really left with a case-by-case, prisoner-by-prisoner determination as to whether the jail didn't draw the line properly? In other words, how would that be appropriate for class treatment?
Your Honor, it goes to the policy. It's not, although they did make exceptions, there was a policy across the board, again with few exceptions, to eliminate, go from 3 to 2. If you look at Alan Kress in particular, they reduced his medication from 3 times a day to 2. Dr. Probst did. Dr. Probst
never. But you're talking about one individual. That's my question.
Correct.
We're talking about, you know, how does that fit into a class when each one is quite separate, seems.
Your Honor, the jail facility hosts about 1,000 people. If they make an exception, and I'm not sure how many are on medication or how many were taking medication, but if they make a handful of exceptions, it's still a facility-wide policy. It's still
You can't
a
determine
policy.
The constitutionality of the policy except by reference to the individual inmates. That's the point. The material point here is that a medical indifference claim is inmate-specific.
Your Honor, if you look at other cases, the Brown versus Plata case out of Supreme Court, they dealt with medical care. If you look at the Smintech case, I know it's a district court case out of the Northern District, they dealt with the situation where they reduced the dentists in the Cook County Jail from 4 to 1. They found that that was suitable for class certification, looking at some of the Seventh Circuit cases. So in that case, it was a policy, but they didn't have to make a determination as to each individual inmate. They said because it's a policy, because people are getting less dental care, their dental care is being delayed, that it is proper for class certification.
Look, the jail didn't adopt some sort of blanket rule. The jail made a discretionary decision as to what type of inmates and their medical conditions needed the third call and which did not. I just don't see any sort of commonality here.
Your Honor, I would agree if it was based on patient welfare. The decision was based on the fact that a for-profit corporation wanted to hire fewer nurses to hand out medication. The fact is there might be people at the facility who, if they don't get that third pill, may pass away, and there may be concern of lawsuits. Doesn't change the fact it's a policy.
You might want to go on to change conditions.
Okay. Changing conditions, there was a determination, or actually I should say when we went to summary judgment in 2011, Warden Conway executed an affidavit indicating that these remaining issues, the conditions of the facility, were taken care of, were addressed back in May of 2008. First of all, one thing that the district court missed is that there's contradictory evidence in the file. If you look at the Harkness affidavit, our Harkness being an inmate who was in there in 2007 as well as February of 2010, he contradicted the notion that these conditions at the jail were changed. And these were conditions, two in particular, that were very onerous. The holding cell, where inmates 20 to 30 were placed in a holding cell and held there for 6 to 18 hours without any running water, one toilet. There was also what's commonly referred to as a Katrina room by inmates, where they went after the holding cell, held about 100 to 150 people, one toilet. It did have running water, had one sink. Those conditions, Warden Conway said were addressed in May of 2008. Obviously, we would not have continued with the litigation if we knew that there were remedial measures taken. That was the purpose of the lawsuit. Certainly, the fact that we litigated for three more years, based on an understanding that this situation was continuing on, is something I believe that Your Honor should consider. The third point is the fact that the lower court relied on the wrong standard. These were pretrial detainees. These were not prisoners. Yet, if you look through the opinion, the judge repeatedly talked about prisoners, that being in a prison is not, obviously not a country club. Granted, he didn't use that phrase. But the fact is there's a different standard. The Seventh Circuit has employed a different standard when it comes to pretrial detainees, that there must be a legitimate and non-punitive government goal served by these conditions. Now, here we're talking about a private company, CCA. What is the legitimate and non-punitive goal served by these conditions of confinement, in both the holding cell as well as the Katrina room? The court never articulated what that standard is. So that is certainly, I think, something that should have been addressed and was not. Your Honor,
I'll save my time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay. Mr. Hahn? Sure.
May it please the court. My name is William Hahn. I'm here on behalf of the appellees in this matter. I first want to address one statement that was made in appellant's argument relating to the characterizing the what is represented in Warden Conway's affidavit that was submitted at the summary judgment stage as remedial measures. In reality, the three conditions of confinement claims that plaintiffs ultimately settled on much later in the case after class certification in response to specific discovery served on them identified three specific conditions, a gnat condition at the facility, alleged mold at the facility, and also the rooms utilized in the intake procedure. Appellants characterized this as the change in the procedure of the intake process that occurred or began to occur in the early part of 2008 as a remedial measure in response to this lawsuit. In reality, it had nothing to do with this lawsuit. This lawsuit and the complaint that was filed and the amended complaint that was shortly that was filed at the end of April 2008 made no allegations relating to the rooms that were utilized in the intake process at the facility at Marion County Jail 2. That process, that change in the process, was made as changes are constantly being made at the facility in order to improve and speed up the processes by which inmates are brought into the facility and classified and placed in the proper dorms for the duration of their stay. With regard to the issue of the three pill calls, the district court did not abuse its discretion in the reduction of the in finding that the reduction of the pill call was not appropriate for class treatment. The change in the procedure, as the court acknowledged, was not an across-the-board application. Undisputed in this case that some of the inmates continued to receive medications three times a day, and that fact is also demonstrated by one of the class representatives' own deposition testimony where he acknowledged that. That said, that accordingly, it would have required individual fact determinations on whether each individual inmate had a medical need for medications three times a day, whether each inmate was injured in any way as a result of having their medications or receiving them two times a day rather than three times a day, and also whether or not any of the defendants in this matter acted with deliberate indifference towards any of those inmates who were not receiving medications three times a day. Appellant's authority that they cite and discuss, particularly the Smentek decision from the Northern District of Illinois, does not demonstrate any abuse of discretion by Judge McKinney in this matter. Smentek specifically stated that all the class members at issue in that case were subject to the same practice. Unlike Smentek, again, there was no reduction in staff across the board. This was simply there was no reduction in staff, period. This was simply a decision that was made in order to better facilitate the processes at Marion County Jail 2. Further, even accepting Smentek and its holding, that holding does not demonstrate an abuse of discretion by Judge McKinney in this case, in his class certification ruling on the issue of the three pill calls. A different district court addressing different facts under different circumstances, reaching a conclusion that differs from the one that Judge McKinney came to in this case, in no ways demonstrates that Judge McKinney abused his discretion. With regard to the summary judgment ruling, the district court also properly granted summary judgment on appellants' claims seeking injunctive relief, which, again, is the only relief that appellants were attempting to obtain by way of the class action in this case. The district court properly granted summary judgment because appellants presented no evidence of any present or ongoing violations that rose to the level of a constitutional violation at Marion County Jail 2. It's Hornbook injunction law that the ongoing harm is needed for entry of an injunction. Appellants claim in their brief that they don't need to demonstrate an ongoing harm. It is simply wrong as a matter of law. That argument is based on a misreading of the Prison Litigation Reform Act. The PLRA did not change the standard on this issue.
Arguably toughened it, right?
That was my next point, Your Honor. If anything, the PLRA's purpose was to restrict and make it more difficult, not expand,
right,
district court's ability to issue injunctions because of the concern of having district courts run the day-to-day operations of correctional facilities.
Right. It requires a high degree of narrow tailoring, and so it's even more rigorously focused on present conditions.
You're correct, Your Honor. And both the PLRA and... And the cases interpreting the effect of the PLRA both say this. Lastly, even considering appellant's evidence in this case on the alleged conditions as they existed in 2008, summary judgment was still appropriate. There was no evidence offered by appellants demonstrating the extreme deprivations needed to prove a constitutional violation. Appellants have cited no authority demonstrating that Judge McKinney erred in any way in his summary judgment ruling that the conditions alleged to be at issue, as identified by appellants in their discovery responses, rose to the level of constitutional violations. They simply restate the same allegations and the same characterizations of how the facts as they contend they existed back in 2008. Further, appellants have offered no evidence demonstrating that any of the appellees in this matter were deliberately indifferent to any of these alleged conditions. The undisputed evidence offered by the appellees at the summary judgment stage, in fact, completely disproves that. This was an independent basis for Judge McKinney's ruling that has not been challenged on appeal. And for all these reasons, the appellees would respectfully request that the judgment in this matter be affirmed.
Thank you. Okay. How much time?
1.5.
We're going to have to really stick to our schedule today, I'm afraid.
I understand, Your Honor. A couple points. First of all, Mr. Harkness's affidavit was not addressed by appellee. Again, 2010, he was there. He drafted an affidavit that said that the situation described in 2008 was still ongoing. So that contradicts the Warden Conway affidavit. Finally, I would like to speak to the general unfairness. This happened in 2008. We litigated this for 3 years. It was not until summary judgment that we find that they supposedly made remediation. If a appellant is allowed to do that, defendant is allowed
to
do
that. Did you have ongoing discovery requests?
We had discovery requests throughout the proceeding, Your Honor. If a defendant is allowed to do that, there's simply no way that you can combat an injunction or get an injunction. So, Your Honor, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. This will be taken under advisement. We're going to go on.